Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. This is Monday, December 10th, 2018. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hello. It is good to be here.
I'm glad to hear it. And also with me today, John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Good morning. Glad to be here, too.
Now, I actually want to start with Brian just for a moment because, John, I don't know if you updated before the show like we had talked about, but the new watchOS update actually has the ECG functionality achievement unlocked, I guess I would say. And I've installed it and set it up. There's an article we'll link to in the show notes that shows you how to set it up and what it can do for you. Now, Brian, you tried it, I believe, during the show on Friday. Have you spent any time with it since?
I've done a couple, just to do a couple.
Excellent. And is your heart still beating? Y'all good?
It is, and I still have a sinus rhythm, which is, again, I am taking that as a full endorsement of Apple Watch of my sedentary lifestyle.
So, anybody wishing to ask Brian any follow-up questions can find him at Waffle House after. or find Waffle House delivering to him. I don't know if that's a thing, but... yeah, who knows? If anyone will find a way, it's Brian, according to him and his watch.
To be fair, I make my own waffles. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Now, I've tried it a couple of times. I tried it one time just to try it, but I did try it one time because I was at a show and I felt really funny, and it felt like I could feel my pulse in my whole body, and I was like wondering if I was actually okay. And I tried it while I was standing there, and it made me feel better to know, like, my watch doesn't think there's anything to freak out about. And I know it's not going to tell me if I'm having a heart attack or anything. I understand. I got all the disclaimers when I walked through the setup. But it was just sort of comforting. And, in fact, I have a friend who had an issue and ended up in an emergency room a few months ago before you could get the ECG functionality in your watch. And it turned out to be nothing, but he has later told me, like, when I asked him how he was doing the hospital stuff, he said if he had had that functionality, he would have had, like, external validation, like, there isn't anything abnormal about what's happening right now, so, you know, maybe go see a doctor when you get home, because he was on a trip, he was traveling, and ended up in the emergency room, and not at home, and, you know, all of the joy and paperwork and cost that that's gonna entail for him, you know, later. So, I'm really glad it's out there and useful, and I know that people have already been posting stories about basic screening stuff, like maybe this is something you should get investigated further by a medical professional, sorts of things, and being able to have that information available. So aside from endorsing your lifestyle, Brian, does it make you feel a little bit better to know that you have that on demand?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm kidding about endorsing my lifestyle. In case anyone thinks I'm actually being serious there, I am in no way being serious when I say that. I am, however, thrilled that I have a sinus rhythm and not one of the problematic rhythms that the Apple Watch can detect. And I think it is a super nifty feature. It is so easy to do. I imagine we're going to get more stories about Apple Watch saving somebody's life.
I think so too.
I imagine we're going to get some stories about some false positives too, where people are agitated and call their doctors unnecessarily.
Probably, but I think that, sure. I don't know that there's going to necessarily be an uptick in those, because somebody who is really stressed out and, you know, has been pacing for the last 20 minutes or whatever and has a high heart rate and does this and gets a higher heart rate reading and calls their doctor about it anyway, was going to be a person who was probably going to call their doctor anyway.
Yeah, so, but it's an engineering trick to make sure you set the level at the point where you don't have that kind of thing happening very often.
Now, John, are you looking forward to being able to try this out on your watch? Because
yeah,
you
I
did
am.
Not
I just
update.
I haven't been able to do the update yet.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to do it today or tomorrow.
Okay. So for
to
people,
be fair, to be fair, you could have done it before we started recording the show.
Yes,
you really, really.
Well, it takes a minute to set it up. I didn't quite have time to set it all up. I'm looking forward.
It's fast. Time. It's fast these days. Apple Watch. Updating on Apple Watch Series 4 is, in my experience, orders of magnitude faster than on previous
devices. Oh, yeah, but I like to kill his article, and I think there's some setup after the fact, right?
A smidge.
Yeah, so it's all pretty quick.
Yeah, but the update itself, the mechanics of updating watchOS from whatever version you have now to the latest version is actually really easy. For me, the only complicated part was I couldn't remember what I did with my travel cable for my Apple Watch, because I have one that's supposed to live in my backpack and it wasn't in my backpack. So that was actually the longest piece for me, and especially coming from Series 0, like Brian did the original issue Apple Watch, having this update go at this speed was mind-blowing.
Series 2 here, not Series 0.
Series 2. Okay, sorry. Somebody else had Series 0.
Yeah, it's Dave is bizarrely still on the Series 0.
Yeah. So if bizarre. Dave could update to Watch OS 5, it would take him all afternoon to run the update. But for everyone else, it's pretty snappy. If you're updating to get the ECG technology, you have to have a Series 4 to do it. And on the Series 4, the update is snappy. So if you've been putting it off because of the massive time undertaking, it's really not that bad. So that was one thing that I noticed about it, because I think that might be the first, maybe the second update I've run on the watch, an OS update I've run on the watch since I got it. And it will probably always surprise me how fast it is, because I remember how long it took on the old one. So
word up. It's great. It's a great feature. I don't think that Apple is done with medical uses for
Apple
Watch.
Not by a long shot.
Oh yeah.
And it is such a ridiculously simple thing to do now, to take a freaking ECG with a device on your wrist. I mean, it's that's science fiction magic, indistinguishable from magic stuff.
It is really nifty, and it's because of the way they engineered some of the technology physically, physically they've engineered stuff into, sorry to get all technical on you, into the digital crown, so that you place your finger against it and it's using the same workout sensor on the back of the watch that touches your arm, so that when you are working out, it can sense your heart rate. It's using that in conjunction with technology built into the digital crown, that when you press it with your finger, you close that circuit and it's able to register your heart rhythm. And it's super duper interesting. I don't understand any of it, but I'm super interested in how all of it works.
Yeah. Yeah. So the bigger takeaway here is that, when Apple talks about wanting to become more of a player in the medical industry, mm-hmm. take that seriously. Mm-hmm. Goodness knows if Apple can bring to market the non-invasive glucose monitoring technology that they're known to be working on. Apple Watch is going to become an ever more necessary device for more people, I think.
Oh, absolutely. That's the one that I'm sort of interested in, is I am glad to see the ECG and how it works and what sort of engineering resources they were able to put behind turning that into a reality as a thing that you could do with your watch. So I'm really curious what the next thing is going to be. So like in Series 5, what are we going to see that the new watch can do? What else can it track? Or what else can you buy a specialized watch band to do?
It may or may not be Series 5. It may be Series 6 and it may be Series 7. I mean, you know, this is Series 4. You know, we've gone from 0 to 0, 2, 3, and 4 to get this particular feature. So, I mean, you know, let's not expect it to be happening every single new release. It's just very obvious that Apple is very serious about having this device play a more important role in monitoring our health.
Yes, absolutely. And I definitely want to see where it's going to go. And I think all of us are interested to see where that's going to go, because I'm really curious specifically what the next piece is going to be, how they implement that. That's the thing that I'm wondering about right now. So
can they keep the same size and dimensions and weight and cram all these new features in, or will there have to be a change?
Well, among other things.
Is that what you're driving at?
Well, partly that and partly how they're going to implement it. Like, is it going to be where you can buy watch bands and the watch bands use some sort of connector technology? So, you know, the short side that you know, is towards your body if you're looking at your watch, like what that piece connects to that will monitor blood sugar or do other things that will make it a device that can track things on more vectors is, you know, what I'm looking for. So are you going to be able to do better heart rate monitoring or other sorts of basic medical stuff that you wouldn't necessarily, you know, can I go check out a unit and do a take home overnight, like sleep monitor test, like by having this thing on my arm overnight instead of buckling into a bunch of other stuff? Like, how are they going to make some of that stuff work? And I'm interested to see the direction that that goes, but we're going to talk more about that in a minute. Because what we want to talk about right now are our sponsors. And our first sponsor today is OpsGenie by Atlassian. And OpsGenie exists because incidents are inevitable. And specifically, like when you talk about outages with your tech, sometimes they're planned, sometimes they're unplanned. And what it comes down to is how well and how quickly your company can respond. So you have to get the right alerts. And that's where OpsGenie by Atlassian comes in. OpsGenie helps your dev and ops teams plan for service disruptions and stay in control and be able to respond quickly during unplanned incidents. The way that they do that is with making sure that you are notifying the right people with the right information, and all of that happens thanks to integrations with loads and loads of different pieces of software, like things from New Relic, stuff from Jira, and literally hundreds more. So you can go find out more at opsgenie.com, OpsGenie.com. And once you're there, sign up for a free company account, and you can add up to 5 team members. Now, our other sponsor today is Jamfnow. Jamfnow helps you set up, manage, and protect all of your Apple devices on demand, and even the ones that are not yours. So if you have all those family members that got new iPads or new iPhones or new Macs for Christmas, you can get them all set up. You can enroll those in Jamfnow. You can get a look at what operating system they're on, so you can make sure they update or don't, depending what you need for them to do. You can store settings in there, like Wi-Fi settings and email settings, and just make sure that that stuff gets updated regularly. And you can manage lots more with their web dashboard. It's really easy to log in and take a good look, and you're able to see what's going on. 3 devices are supported for free, and additional devices are $2 a month. So if you go over to the Jamf website, which is jamf.com/TDO, you can sign up for your free account today. Now, I was talking about looking toward the future and, you know, what Apple's going to do next with the watch. And we were talking about that being down the line. Like, maybe it's not an update that comes out next year, or maybe it's not, you know, whenever the Series 5 is released. But John, you wanted to talk specifically about things that Apple should be doing next year. And with next year breathing down our necks, let's hear what you have to say about
it. As an observer of Apple, I keep a mental list of the things that kind of annoy us, that we wish Apple were doing differently, that seems sensible and rational. Sometimes Apple doesn't do something because they think they can make a little bit of extra money. And I've appealed to them in a couple of cases where, you know, they could back off just a slight amount and maybe not make quite as many dollars. And then we're talking about a fraction of their total revenue, and yet delight the customers. And so I made a list of 10 items. Not all fall into that category. Some things are just things that need to be done, like, you know, give us Apple Time Machine 2.0 for APFS drives. Let's give us a revamp of iOS home screen GUI, which has been pretty much stagnant except for folders since 2007.
Mm-hmm.
How about a commitment to update a Mac every model at least every 2 years, unless it's discontinued? Leaving the Mac community hanging is just abuse. I mean, we don't like it. How about a movement to a standard of 32 gigabytes on all Macs? MacBook Pro for 2018, Coffee Lake processor, 13 inches maxed out at 16 gigabytes of RAM. I know they don't have enough engineering space and cooling in there for anything other than low power or DDR RAM, but they need to try.
Therefore, it's not a pro device.
Well,
spoiler.
Are you saying that with tongue in cheek?
Nope.
Or are you serious?
I'm serious. That's good. Not a pro device. Good. That's good. Not a pro device.
I mean, in 2013, late 13, early 14, I bought a 16 gigabyte Mac. It was the last Mac I bought, and I put 16 gig of RAM in it, and I thought, this is the last year I'm going to settle for that.
Yeah.
So here we are in 2018, and
yeah.
Apple's still selling Macs with a maximum of 16 gigabytes of RAM, like the MacBook Air and the 13-inch MacBook Pro. It's crazy.
Yeah, so to sort of take this out to a more holistic view, I love Apple's beautiful machinery, but I want small to stop being the obsessive trait for
yes.
design.
Yeah, that's what got the MacBook in trouble.
It's small at the expense of functionality. So this is an offshoot of form over function. I want function over form. I still want the stuff to be beautiful, and that's the thing. There's plenty of room to buy or to make these devices beautiful and still be the size they need to be to give us the internal things that we need to make them the devices that we want and need. This is not rocket science. And it's not like no one's sitting around saying, oh my God, I'd buy an iPhone if it was only thinner. No one's going around saying, oh my God, Mac Pros is really awesome, but it's just so big.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's just not a thing. So stop making that a thing, Apple. So, I'm sorry, John, you were
that
saying?
That was carried to its logical extreme, I think, in the MacBook, which was too small on the inside to give us what we really needed. So hence the return to the larger MacBook Air and 16 gig of RAM.
It
still maxes out at 16, though.
Like, Apple can talk about courage all they want to, but in real life, it seems like that's why the headphone jack went away, was because they wanted to make the phones thinner. And
well, there was
part
some
of the
issues too. Waterproofing was part of it. The IP68.
Yeah, I'm okay with the headphone jack going away.
Yeah, but as a thing, the reason it left was for thinness. And part of the reason that people are saying now that the phone is never going to go USB-C is because the phone would have to be thicker in order to do that. And that's just not a thing that's going to happen.
The point of egress is also a huge part of that, though, for water. Yeah. So it's not just thinness on the headphone jack.
Okay.
On item number 10, Apple's been irritating me, and it seems other people, for years on their decision on how to set up the memory for the storage options for iPhones. It seems like every time you want to pick a sensible storage option, Apple's forcing
you can't have the sensible
the
one.
Bigger. Yeah, like this iPhone X, the iPhone XS this year, you can have a 64 or a 256.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want 128, you can't have it.
Then look at last year's phone, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I've wondered that forever.
Frustration with Apple. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's the sweet spot, I think, is 128 gigabytes. And to force you to go up to 256 if you don't want to and spend an extra $200
mm-hmm.
on an already $1,000 phone just seems like a money grab, and it's irritating and unwanted. So that was number 10 on the list.
So, John, if you could wave a magic wand and make one of the 10 things on your list true, which one would it be?
Ooh, good question.
You get one.
I think the most pressing issue right now is the aging of the iOS GUI on iPads.
Really?
Yeah, it's just...
Okay.
It's just... It's a 2007 to 2018, 11 years of mm-hmm. of a grid of fixed spacing, of complexity, and rearranging your layout and selecting apps. hunting for apps, finding apps.
I'm going to have to go to the panel on this one to see if John gave us the right answer. Panel, no. That's not the right answer, sir.
Well, Kelly forced me into a fast decision, so.
Yeah, that's, but I really,
I was quick draw here.
I really thought, John, if I was going to pick what I thought you would choose, it would either be 32 gig of RAM or it would be the 2-year update.
Well, Apple has the power to redesign the iOS GUI, but there's engineering and cooling and other issues with putting 32 gig of RAM in all your Macs, and that involves design, thickness.
Yeah, but I told you, you get decisions. To wave a magic wand and get your way, so what does it matter?
I was looking at that when I made a quick decision.
So, you know, well, okay, in this case, details. So, do you want to change your answer?
Yeah, I want to change my answer. Okay. Thanks, Brian.
What's your answer?
6. 32 gig RAM on all consumer Macs is an option. And much more, of course, on the pros.
Okay.
Which is already there.
Brian, if you could pick one off the list, what would you pick?
I would start freestyling a little bit and say that I want new Mac models every year. I want new Mac models every year, and I want my pro machines to be pro.
What makes a pro machine pro?
The ability to change things in it.
Okay.
In particular, storage and RAM. And being big enough to be able to have enough RAM in it. Come on. Come on, man. It's a pro machine. Make it pro. Make it pro.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, or call it the MacBook Pro Lite.
Diet Pro.
Diet, yeah.
But one of the things I asked for in the 2019 Mac Pro was, quote, deliver a special base model that serious prosumer individuals can dream about owning, as opposed to institutions only. We're still trembling about how much this 2019 Mac Pro is going to cost now that we've seen the iMac Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if it's modular,
it'd be nice if there were a special base model that looked like the big model, but maybe had some less capability that we could prosumers could like dream about.
One processor back or something, and yeah.
Like, without having to think about.
I am hoping that Apple's. I still believe that the Mac Pro is going to be one of the first Macs to have Apple designed processors in it.
Oh.
And.
Mm. Okay.
And I think that that's why there's been this delay. This was one of Jeff's last shows, Kelly. But I think that that's why we've seen this big delay, this multi-year delay. You know, Apple teased us and announced this Mac Pro a year and a half ago,
mm-hmm.
2 years ago.
That the new one's coming.
The new one's coming.
Really.
It's going to be 2019 or 2020. And the only conceivable reason that it would take that long to design a new computer is if there is some aspect of it that takes that long to design,
mm-hmm.
and form factor ain't it.
No.
And where to put the processors from Intel or AMD is not it. And where to put the GPU is not it. But one thing that could take a long time is Apple's chip design team designing a desktop class ARM processor. If such a thing
that will run Mac OS
and with virtual machine hardware,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that is the one big, like, listen, at this point, when the new Mac Pro eventually ships, it is an Intel device, I'm just going to be shaking my head. I'm going to be, you know, delighted that it's already out, but what could possibly
spoiler alert, iPod? I'm going to tell you all what that show is going to look like. I'm going to go, welcome to Mac Observer Daily Observations, and Brian. And then I'll be back in 25 minutes to cut him off and tell you all it's been a lovely show. You can hear more on Apple Context Machine. Yeah.
I had a point. The Mac Pro
needs to come, and you will shake your head.
And it's the thing. And then it's going to have the stuff. I forgot it.
I think part of it is getting people to take Apple seriously when they put Pro on a thing. because the amount of pro in a thing right now.
Oh, I remember. The iPod was start to finish in 9 months. Like, hey, let's do this thing. 9 months later, they're ready to go.
Whoa.
I mean, what could bloody
I always forget
well,
that.
And like, think about how many things were invented for the iPod.
Uh-huh.
Invented. The scroll wheel was invented. The interface was invented. Mm-hmm. There's so many aspects of that thing that were invented. And when it comes to computers today, you're not inventing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're iterating stuff. So there's just no reason for the Mac Pro to take so long unless it's waiting for the new Apple desktop processor.
Well, and which is a compelling argument, because you were talking about like the iPod taking 9 months. The one that I always think of is Disneyland, because Disneyland went from, like, it was an idea a couple of years earlier, but the actual time to go from Orange Groves to Disneyland was a year and a day. That's how long it took them to go from zero to Disneyland. Mm-hmm. So that's I'm going to file that the iPod one away, because I always forget that was a 9 month project, that they went from zero to white slab of plastic in 9 months. So that's the kind of stuff that I wonder about, you know. And then, like, it takes, you know, 4 years to revise an existing design, you know.
Well,
that stuff gets frustrating.
Yeah, or even come up with a new design. But right. That just like there's just so much anyway. But I won't iterate.
You will on a future show when we have more to talk about on that front. I'm sure you will. I have no doubt, and I'm going to be looking forward to talking to you about that. The other thing, just one last thing before we go, I want to point out that if I was picking off this list, I would pick Time Machine 2.0, because I think it's awful that it isn't working for people properly yet, because Time Machine's important. And I think it is criminally underrated, because it's one of those things that just works all the time and nobody really complains about it. And it doesn't really get weird most of the time. And you should be able to just back your computer up. And if you're on APFS now, you can't do that. And that's sort of weird and frustrating.
Well, you can. You just have to format your external drive as HFS Plus, which some people who are not really technically advanced go, why do I have to format my internal drive and my Time Machine drive differently? That's a
yeah, it shouldn't be that way.
Put on the average consumer that's just too severe.
Mm-hmm. I think it's probably a tie between the Time Machine update and ending the MacBook. There's too many computers right now, and that needs to be fixed, and it should be cleared up immediately. And so that would be the other thing I would choose. I'm actually going to be excited to talk to both of you about all of these things in the future. But in the meantime, we're going to have to call it for today. So thank you for joining me, Brian.
Yep. Thanks for having us.
And thanks for being on the show with me today, John.
Hey, my pleasure.
And I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.